to you. It's Behind the News, where you get the last word on the day's topical stories. My name is Agatha Samoa, and tonight, our countries that contribute troops to problem spots on the African continent under threat of reprisal attacks from insurgents. Tonight on Behind the News, we explore the latest phenomenon of reverse attacks on countries trying to help stabilize conflict-prone areas of the world. Are we safe from attacks by Islamic insurgents? How is Ghana adopting remedial measures to stave off any future attacks as happened in Kenya? Insurgents and the Islamic religion, what is the proper link? And Professor Kofi Awuno, how the literary world remembers that literary giant. Join me in the next hour as we discuss these issues. You can also join the conversations by text 0266-677570. 0266-677570. Behind the News, live on Radio Ghana in Accra. Our text line again is 0266-677570. 0266-677570. The heinous crime committed by the Islamist group Al-Shabaab in a terrorist attack in Kenya might have incurred the wrath of millions around the world and rattled pious Muslims who perceive such attacks as un-Islamic and a pure criminal act rather than an Islamic injunction jihad. Islamic scholars have time and again disassociated the religion with violence-inspired activities. But critics still argue that the fact that most of these groups, such as Al-Qaeda, Boko Haram, the Taliban, Hezbollah, and others, have indicated that they are inspired by their religions, strengthen the argument of the critics. But are those actions enough justification to underrate attacks which go a long way to affect the image of the religion? Sheikh Arimia Shaibu is an Islamic scholar and he's joining us on the line. Good evening, Sheikh, and welcome to the program.
Good evening, and thank you for the opportunity to present to your listeners.
Well, Sheikh, how does the Islamic world and all adherents of the Islamic faith view the attacks on the Westgate Mall in Kenya?
Thank you very much. It is a very dastardly act, worthy of condemnation by all well-meaning people. One does not even need to be a Muslim to condemn this kind of act. It's a crime against humanity. It's a disrespect for the dignity of human beings and a violation of the sanctity of human life, which Islam upholds. And so Muslims of different understanding and a proper understanding of Islam will forever remain opposed to this kind of activity. There is no place and there's no basis for it in Islam. And so for us, it is with shock and amazement that we received the information, you know, about the activity and how they have held people hostage in a place that is also open to even Muslims who could also become victims of this kind of activity. But let me also add and say that evil is evil. It does not need to be associated with any particular religion for us to be worthy of condemnation. We must condemn every human being who harbors this kind of thing. Recently, the most recent one is some shooting incident in the United States of America at a naval base. We've heard of some shooting of people in Norway, Oslo. There was some shooting of some children somewhere in the U.S., all these things are not to be associated with a particular religion. But our worry is when you hear a section of the Muslim community claiming responsibility and then deriving their inspiration from our holy book, then we must get worried. We must be worried because in a global world where information comes very, very quick to us, young people are imbibing some of these ideas and believing that they do so because they are fixed and connected to their religion. It can be a very dangerous trend, and Muslims of different mind and proper understanding must rise up to the occasion and make a review of the kind of teachings that people have received over the centuries, over the decades, and make sure that we are now giving people the correct understanding. Secondly, Muslims who have a better understanding must become a bit courageous. It appears we have allowed a wider scope of operation for those who are violent and for those who do not give the correct interpretation of Islam to operate and to dominate the space of Islamic activity. And I think that we owe to ourselves that responsibility to come out with the correct teachings so that we can restore the correct image worthy of respect for all those who even do not profess our religion. And I think that that is the position that I hold in this issue.
But why do these groups perceive what they are doing as an Islamic injunction, and I mean the jihad?
You see, I have a certain position that there are certain texts of the Quran that people sometimes interpret it outside of the historical context or the context of revelation. And any time people make an attempt, they mislead the people. Sometimes, even in Ramadan, I must be very, very, very honest and very, very frank and candid, that sometimes, even in Ramadan, you find people who do not have the proper insight making attempts to interpret. And such, they do it without making reference to the historical context that made that particular revelation applicable, and to understand that life is dynamic and circumstances are dynamic and they do change. And so therefore, principles of Islam as they apply in changing circumstances must also be considered seriously. When you apply it without reference to the historical context, you can mislead people and you can give the wrong teaching to people, and that's what we have been suffering over the period. You find a very young person, so vital, having the energy, has been given the wrong teachings, and he is ready to rise up and fight at any time, just because he's been given the wrong direction, the wrong interpretation, and has been misinformed. And I think that that is where the problem comes from.
You said earlier that we must condemn these criminal acts. What lessons can the Ghanaian Muslim learn from these terrorist attacks?
Yes, the lesson we must learn is that we ourselves are not safe from this dastardly activity. And so we must engage with Muslim civil society and even non-Muslim civil society. We must also engage with the security personnel. We must engage in a very fruitful kind of dialogue in such a way that we ourselves should be able to see the signals at any time and to be frank and to be honest to draw attention to such signals. We as Muslims must also begin to talk with the sources of our knowledge and the sort of scholarship that we are receiving. We should be able to engage with our embassies, Islamic diplomatic missions in the country, so that together we form a chain and a network of security consciousness, that through our own religion we guarantee the security of our own people and on our own selves. We need to survive in order to be able to give our teachings. And we need to also be able to allow people to survive, so that they can become a recipient of our teachings. If we kill them, then we do not have anyone to talk to. So it defies the logic of our mission to kill the people who we target with our mission. It defies the logic of our own mission. And I think that this kind of logic has not been understood. That is why we are suffering all these things. So we need to come out strong, and our scholars must accept this, and we should all engage in a more intellectual, spiritual, and moral warfare against this kind of dastardly activities, which does not have a place in our religion. Does not have a place, and I emphasize this. My religion educates me to respect human life, respect other people's religion, call people for dialogue, find a better way of resolving conflict, so that we can establish peace in the world and make it worthy of human dignity and worthy of mutual understanding that guarantees us fruitful survival on this earth. I think that's the way we should all understand this issue.
All right, Sheikh, we are grateful for your time with us tonight.
Thank you so much.
Sheikh Arimiyar Shaibu is an Islamic scholar. Meanwhile, former President Rawlings has waded into the discussion on the Al-Shabaab's terrorist attack in Kenya. He has implored the AU mission in Somalia to explore every means to bring the activities of Al-Shabaab to an end. The spokesperson for the former president, Kofi Adams, has joined us on the line. Good evening, Mr. Adams, and welcome to the program.
Good evening, and good evening to your listeners.
Well, Mr. Adams, as a former special envoy of the EU to Somalia, how does the former president, Mr. Rawlings, feel about the terrorist attacks in Kenya?
Yeah, like any other person, he feels that this is senseless. It cannot be allowed in any circumstance and must be condemned by every well-meaning the citizen of this country and beyond. Like he put in his statement, the devious mood and acts of Al-Shabaab needs to be dealt with once and for all. And what happened in Kenya on Saturday indeed has exposed the challenge that AMISOM troop contributing countries such as Kenya, Uganda, and the rest faces in post July 2012 activities in Somalia. I believe there have been some successes in the political process in Somalia. What is most critical and important now is for all countries to join hands in fighting terrorism wherever it occurs.
But looking at what is happening, would you say that terrorist attack has dealt a big blow to all the efforts that the AU have made in bringing about peace in the Horn of Africa and the eastern part of the continent?
No, I would not accept any such suggestion that it's a big blow to the efforts in stabilizing Somalia. I think I'm happy to say that politically and in terms of security, the government of the people of Somalia is now having control even beyond Mogadishu as compared to in the past where they were only in charge of just the presidential palace and the airport area. So many more areas are now under the control of government forces supported by AMISOM. So there has been some successes. What we need now is to have a team support from across the continent of Africa. There should be that cooperation that we should not see a situation in one country as being too far away from us. It can be very far, but it will be very near. We are not going to build any giant wall to stop our people from traveling to other countries. And so what is happening in one country must really concern us. What is happening in Nigeria must concern us. What is happening in Somalia must concern us. What is happening in Kenya now must really concern us. And so that will be the advice. But what is most critical is that this is the time the people of Kenya need the support of the world. We need to stand by them. We need to encourage President Uhuru Kenyatta that, yes, like you, the question you put forward, yes, it's a blow to them. That they must be steadfast and continue to fight to stop once and for all the activities of terrorism.
But is the former president still very active in finding solution to the Somali problem?
Yeah, he is. He is the AU the special envoy for that assignment. He's done quite a lot, and that has brought some kind of political success alongside the military and security successes that have been chalked there. We are now in another phase of the Somalia project, where a lot of consolidation is taking place on the ground. And I am not surprised that they have now decided to take their fight outside of Somalia to other neighboring countries, especially the two contributing countries. It is because some sources have been choked within, and they are having it very difficult operating from within Somalia. They now have to move outside to do what they used to do within the Mogadishu and other towns within Somalia. So it's unfortunate what has happened. A lot of lives have been lost, over 67 people dying, 61 civilians, and 6 or so plus military persons. It's not what we expected to have happened on that day, and many others injured. And to our own professor, I will not to find himself in this place, twist of fate, as His Excellency John Dramani Mahama put it, there for a function and happened to find himself in this trouble. Our condolence to the family and to the town, the region, the party, and the country at large. We all mourn Professor Awono, and we would also celebrate him for his achievements.
But then, Kofi, what lessons can the African continent learn from the Al-Shabaab terrorist attack? Is there anything that we can learn from it?
Surely, there's a lot that we can learn. One of such things is, I would have wished that by now AU will have a standing army, a standing force that can invade, or that can go into countries where need be, like in the case of Somalia. So it doesn't become that some countries are identified as just the troop contributing countries and therefore could be targeted by these extremists in attempt to attack them for contributing the troops and security presence that have helped deal with them. If the standing army is there, nobody knows which country has contributed what. Everybody says, okay, this is an AU high command which is responsible for doing such, so they cannot single out any particular country for attack. So I think we should hurry and institute the African command. What it also tells us is that we should improve on our security, our daily checks. There are a number of malls in Nairobi. The village walk, for example, they have quite serious high-level security that it would have been difficult for these people to operate in that mall, the village walk mall. But all the same, it's a wake-up call, it's a lesson for all of us, even in Ghana here, how we handle security in all our places, public places like the malls and what have you. For me, it's a wake-up call.
All right, Ms. Adams, we want to thank you for your time with us tonight.
Thank you.
Kofi Adams, spokesperson for the former president. Kenya has suffered from the Al-Shabaab terrorist act for contributing to peacekeeping in Somalia. Tonight we look at the link between foreign policy and internal security. And Emmanuel Suwate is a security analyst and he's joining us on the line. Good evening, Mr. Suwate, and welcome to the program.
Good evening to you, Madam Agatha, and your listeners.
Well, Kenya has been on the receiving end for its role in Somalia. Should Ghana be worried because we have been playing a major role in peacekeeping abroad?
Okay, you see, there are two types of peace support operations that Ghana has been part of. There's the old traditional peacekeeping that has dealt mainly with conflicts that are not of extremist nature. In other words, when you have insurgents and extremists who are willing to die and who would bomb and cause mayhem and pain and death, those types of conflicts are quite novel in terms of the African security architecture, particularly when you're talking about, for example, in the past, what had been happening as against what is happening now. So let me give examples from the 1990s when Castilla started his insurgency from the Nima County, I think in December 1989, thereabouts, and then is spread around the Mano River Union. When you look at the type of conflict in DRC that has been there for, you know, it's getting 50 years now. Those ones are different. We send our troops to Lebanon and this time to, I think, Darfur and places like that. Those conflicts are different from a place like maybe Afghanistan, the Tura Bora region, or in Yemen, or trying to send your troops to Somalia. Those areas have their own uniqueness and their own challenges. So the fact that you have been contributing troops does not necessarily mean that those countries that you're sending your troops could attack us. But now it's a different ballgame where you have to balance your foreign policy, how you contribute to, how you contribute them to, your official pronouncements, your standing vis-a-vis, you know, your internal security. So you need to balance the two. And it's not an easy act of diplomacy. You need diplomats, you know, well-experienced and well-tested diplomats. You need your security chief. You need your politicians to sit down and try to make that delicate balance between looking at your own local peculiarities, your own vulnerability, your own challenges, and also the role you have to play towards complying with your international commitment.
So are you saying that we shouldn't be worried about any reprisal attacks?
No, you can't say that. The fact that we even have our troops in Mali is a concern. The fact that we have Boko Haram close to us and Ansaru and other people close to us, they are now proliferation of small extremist group, but sometimes I don't want to mention their name because sometimes what they want is prominence. So I deliberately refuse to mention their name. But you have the proliferation of small splinter groups, and those are great inspiration from Al Qaeda. But you see, there's another important part I have to add up, some other things to talk about. People are talking about shopping mall. Let's come closer home. Let's use Boko Haram. Boko Haram has used a number of different tactics, and the tactics have been evolving as a response to the military operations by the Nigerian government, their intelligence community, and the police. Okay, so they've been using improvised explosive devices. The initial thing they were doing was that they were putting them at places like military facilities or homes or churches. Later, later they developed the expertise of making remote-controlled IEDs. It got to a time they were doing drive-by shooting, killing people, targets, and running away. There was a time that they were attacking open markets. They were attacking mosques, churches. They were even attacking fisher folks because there was a vigilante group at a particular place who arrested some suspected Boko Haram people and handed them to the military. So while they were fishing, Boko Haram came and killed them. And you have Boko Haram, of course, doing suicide bombing, and one of it was when they attacked the UN building. I could have been in that building, but the SRAD said that, no, I should go to the border. You know, so God saved me from that. So these are some of the issues that I want us to also consider. Yes.
Now, looking at the Kenya issue again, doesn't mean the country did not prepare well for any possible attack.
It depends on how you look at it. The first thing I want to say is that, of course, during military regimes, not only in Africa, but even in Latin America, the military, the intelligence community, was the main source of dread, fear, and pain to local people and to its citizens. People were vanishing, extrajudicial killing. But you've gone past that. In democratic dispensation, most of the military, the police, the intelligence communities, in some fairly good number of states, are willing and are prepared and are motivated to protect the ordinary person. They are willing to protect the state. So that should be recognized. However, sometimes there are challenges. Sometimes it is true that they are negligent. Sometimes it is true that they don't have the right logistics because they have not been given the right resources. It is true that sometimes ordinary people don't provide information that can be processed to intelligence. But it is also true, however, that you can put in place certain mechanisms, but you can have intelligence failure or your assessment can be wrong. In other words, it's a learning curve that we keep learning. You cannot have a 100% proof strategy. Kenya should have expected it. But I think that terrorists are also smart and wise, and they also monitor and strike hard if they can.
Mr. Asomate, what has happened in Kenya from the viewpoint of Al-Shabaab looks like we should all stop contributing troops to troubled spots of the world, else we may be hit Do you share that view?
To an extent, yes, but I have a strong caveat to that. Let me explain. You see, I have said it elsewhere that you need to balance your commitment. Ghana needs to balance a commitment to certain protocols and international legal instruments and certain commitments under peace, security and development, either ECOWAS, AU or UN. You need to do that because the security of Ghana is linked to the security of others, you know, and the strength, of course, of the linkages are different. However, you also have to understand your local peculiarities, your local challenges, your vulnerabilities, your assets, your ability to protect your people. And to balance that is not easy. I'm talking about UTFM, but UTFM in a very nice and complicated way, which says that you are part of the international community. Yes, contribute, but also understand, appreciate your vulnerability, what you can do, what you cannot do, your local or your own security priorities, and try to balance it. Who can do that? I think that with contributing from civil sector of society, you also need seasoned diplomats. They can be retired. You need security chiefs, seven and retired. You need politicians, multi-party. When you sit down, the military will tell you this commitment, these are the likely consequences. Diplomats will say, if you don't do this, these are the repercussions now or in the future. The politicians will also say, okay, from their perspective, these are what they think. And I think that that balancing game is still an act that we learn, but those are the things that I think that will help us. That is one side, because we are talking about extremists. We also have Boko Haram. People keep talking about Al-Shabaab, but Boko Haram has, in my view, killed more people than Al-Shabaab. If you look at how Boko Haram has operated, the number of Nigerians they have killed, it is more than those in the shopping malls, and even those Al-Shabaab has inflicted on the Kenyans. So Boko Haram is closer, and that is where my discomfiture lies. You should focus only overwhelmingly on them referring to Al-Shabaab, but also Boko Haram is tactic and its threat to the sub region.
Are we in a position to deal with any possible threat?
If dealing with means that do we have the capacity to totally prevent it, no. If dealing also means that do we have the resources to adequately respond when it happens, that's one, so I'm not too sure. And what indicators am I looking out for? I'm looking out for special forces who have been training for the past 5-10 years, who are well equipped, and all they do, maybe 3 things, 4 things, training. I don't think we have that now. The other thing we talk about is NADMO. Is NADMO well resourced to deal with these type of challenges after it has been cleared? I'm talking about not only the physical staff, but talking about, for example, psychologists trained in post-traumatic stress disorder on a massive scale. Do we have the culture of people donating blood and having a sort of blood that can be used to treat people? I don't think so. Do you have enough doctors who can deal with, for example, like flu and the SARS on a massive scale? I don't think so. But for me, the good news is that there is now an awareness. There is a willingness of the media to create a platform for ordinary Ghanaians in Ghana and the diaspora to contribute. There is this contributions and discussions in our view. If the national security is listening, if the police are listening, if, for example, the National Security Council is listening, they'll be taking some of this information and shaping how the intelligence community is operating, how the military, the police are operating, and how, for example, our foreign missions would have to also maybe step up gathering of information. The last one I want to add is the relationship between our stability as a country, talking about are we prepared, and border management. Let me give you some practical examples. I'm driving from Abuja to Accra through the two countries, Benin, Togo, by road. I've driven from Accra to Enugu through Abidjan, through the whole of Northern Ivory Coast, through the whole of Burkina Faso into major part of Mali. I've driven in Ghana. I'm familiar with most of our borders, from Enugu to Osekodukrom, Sampa, the northern part of the upper west region, up to Tumu. I know Hamele, I know Boku, I know Paga, I know Nagrombo. On the eastern side, I know down even to Tripoli and the KGB area. Why am I giving this detail? I've been there. In northern Nigeria, I've been along the Nigerian border. From Mobi, I've been to the border from Mobi down to Cross River. I've been through the waterways from Calabar to Cameroon. So I'm giving this practical example that I have lived experience. It is very difficult to police this border. Let me give you other statistics. The Minister for Interior for Nigeria, Comrade Imoru, has said that Nigeria has almost 2,000 illegal entry points, and they have 84 legal ones. For them to provide electronic surveillance for the legal and illegal is going to cost the Nigerian state almost $220 million.
All right.
Why am I giving the details? To show that there are also financial implications.
All right.
It can be done.
Ms. Asuwate, I want to thank you for your time with us tonight. Emmanuel Suwate is the security analyst. It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana Accra. Behind the News is live on Radio Central 92.5 in Cape Coast, Twin City 94.7 in Tapadi, and Sunrise FM 106.7 in Kofoja. Let's read some of your text messages. AU Sarah Kintana says, indeed, I will remember Professor Awuno for his poetry. I read The Cathedral, that talks about symbol of colonialism, and condolence to the family. May his soul rest in perfect peace. And Rashid Jensen writes, the memory of death is a caution to the living. The death of Prof in Kenya portrays how a developing country like Ghana ought to practice democracy at its best. May his soul rest in perfect peace. And Emmanuel Seren Boga says, what does the Holy Land of Islam say about these cowardly acts of terrorism? They must openly condemn it because the victims are mostly innocent and not the direct enemy. How can such innocent lives be claimed for someone else's belief of jihad? Ghana is now professorless. May the souls of all the innocent lives claimed rest in peace. Meanwhile, God is watching you, Mr. Terrorist. Napoleon from Tumusankofa Bay says, may Professor Awuno's soul rest in peace. Yakuti Jendao in Wales, who says, good work, but when will you bring the Minister for Education to tell us more about the reforms at the teacher training colleges? I'm sure one of these days will bring him to the studio. Mr. Kofi Nkrakhan says, Professor Awuno's death is very sad. May his soul rest in peace. Napoleon Tumusankofa Bay says, may Prof. Kofi Awuno and others who lost their lives in a shopping mall in Kenya by the Islamist terrorists rest in perfect peace. And Abdul Kudus from Naro Nadoli District in Wa says, when will the government take a look at the Wahan Road and Sobek and save lives? It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana Accra. The King Animal attacks thrown up the problem of the preparedness of countries to deal with aggrieved groups like the Al-Shabaab Islamic insurgents and how to stave off attacks from such groups now and in the future. For some people, Kenya, knowing very well about its operations, should have known better how the Al-Shabaab operates. Let's seek some views about how these people operate from retired Major General of Ghana Armed Forces, Major General Henry Anidoho. Good evening, General. Welcome to the program.
Good evening.
General, with your experience, what do we know about groups like Al-Shabaab?
Well, Al-Shabaab is a terrorist group that has been operating in Somalia for some time now, and Africa Union has been trying to contain the situation. In fact, it was Uganda that first sent troops into Somalia, followed by Burundi, after African Union decided as an organization to go into the situation in Somalia, because if it's not contained, it will simply spread. Of course, since then, other countries have joined the operation, the African countries, with Kenya actually moving in, I think over 2 years ago, to make sure that they push the Al-Shabaab out of their borders, because they were creating a lot of security problems for the government of Kenya, both inside and around their borders.
And how do they operate?
Well, in various ways, this is what we call a non-conventional forces. And the one thing known about them is that they are prepared to die in order to kill as many people as they can. And so that's not a conventional force that you can use a conventional tactics to meet. You have to be prepared to finish the real task for killing troops. And therefore, all armies all over the world, I believe, are now turning troops to especially be aware of this kind of terrorist groups. And I have learned the service over 12 years ago, and I have no doubt that my family are also doing that here in Ghana.
And how come they have been around for so long without being exterminated by the regular armies?
Well, they have been around, and all efforts have been channeled to that. In actual fact, I was in Kenya in February this year, and we had a proper briefing as to what the Kenya Armed Forces have been doing about the Al-Shabaab. I would say that from that briefing, I gathered that they were not as effective as they were originally. They've been pushed away from the capital, even though occasionally they still go back to strike, because they are modus operandi. They will pick have a new target once in a while if they get an opportunity, and the fact that they are prepared to die in order to kill as many people as they can, they have to infiltrate.
Should we be scared that they could spread their tentacles wide to other parts of the continent and so kill innocent people?
Well, we should be aware. As a people, they should not prevent us from living a normal life. But there has to be education as to how we conduct our daily lives. How to be able to look at things and look at them carelessly, but not taking anything for granted. And I think that should be a nationwide education, but they should not make us timid that we do not live our normal lives, because that is also one of their techniques, to make the people timid, to make the people afraid, not to go to places that they would like to go to, so that they don't live a normal life. But we should avoid that. We should not give them credit that they are making us go according to the dictates of their plans.
General, with your experience as a troops commander around the continent, do you have any idea how they are sponsored and financed?
Well, I don't have any statistics on that, but of course, the way they operate, there must be some financial behind them. And when they were in Mogadishu, there were also information about them that the currency trade that was going on around that part. There were some people who were not, I would say, known, but there was a tradition that you had a group of people behind them who were using this currency to finance the Al-Shabaab. Without money, where would they get the weapons and ammunition from? So certainly somebody must be equipping them to do what they are doing.
But can they ever be defeated and disarmed in the nearest future?
So long as the forces continue to confront them, stage by stage, they will be able to bring them under control. Defeating them at one go is not going to happen like that, because remember, there is no such thing like 100% security. No security system is 100%. It's not watertight. Because as you are planning to confront them, so are they also planning to do other things to take you by surprise. They also use surprise as a principle of war, as regular troops use. So the thing is to be one step ahead of them, to be able to foresee what their next step will be. And step by step, because they should be really brought down to a position where they will be ineffective. That's what the security forces, I know, are doing all over the world, because that's the new phase of war that they are fighting.
Australia is a continent should be scared. And coming back home, should we be scared that one day a thing like that can happen, because Ghana has troops in Mali?
We should not be scared. We should be aware that terrorism is all over, and that awareness is what is important. Look at something which doesn't look very normal to you, you will touch it very quickly. Because the security forces are not going to be everywhere. Security is everybody's business, and with education, you have to classify education for people not to take things for granted. You know, somebody may throw something, you see from a distance, like a piece of cigarette, and perhaps it could be something else. So if you see something that looks a little suspicious, you have to teach the people who can handle the situation.
Well, again, I want to thank you for your time with us tonight.
Thank you very much.
General Henry Anidoho is a retired Major General of the Ghana Armed Forces. It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana Accra. Behind the News is also live on Volta Star 91.1 and 91.3 in Ho. You are Radio 89.5 in Bolgatanga. Radio Upper West 90.1 in Ryan. Radio Savannah 91.2 in Tamale. Now let's read some more of your text messages. Balai Abdullahi says, my mind still troubles me about the Westgate shopping mall attack in Kenya and why a big mall like this does not have scanners or machines that can detect people who have weapons when entering the place. Africa and other world leaders should wake up from their slumber. And Dauda London in Boku says, good evening and God bless you. Ghana still needs peace. And Balara Abdullahi again says the government's policy of providing 200 SHS still remains fresh in the minds of the people of Hain, the Jarapa district of the Upper West region, and we therefore appeal to the government to complete the only community SHS which was started by the former MP in the area. Many thanks for your text messages. It's Behind the News. Well, one of the biggest casualties of the Kenyan Mall attacks was our own Professor Aruno, a literary giant. Let's go to the phone lines and speak to the president of the Ghana Association of Writers, Kwesi Jana Painting. Good evening, Sir Jana Painting. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
How would your group remember Professor Aruno?
Oh, good evening to your listeners. Yes, it's the story from Nairobi. Over the weekend has not been good, has it? But we have issued a statement and explained that Professor Kofi Awuno was a founding member of the Ghana Association of Writers. As most people know by now, the Ghana Association of Writers was founded in 1957. And he was one of the group of young writers at the time who came together, inspired by the first president, Kwame Nkrumah, to define a cultural identity and agenda for the new emerging nation. He has been a stalwart of writing, Ghanaian and African writing, as you know. And for us in the association, he has been an inspiration. In fact, he was the keynote speaker at our last Congress in May last year, when, in fact, he demonstrated that he was a living archive. So it's a big, big irreplaceable loss. One had hoped that now that he had finished his stint as chairman of the Council of State, he would, you know, he had said it. He was even going to write a lot more, and that we were really going to benefit from his immense knowledge, experience, and his willingness to help. He told us, my doors are open, you don't even need an appointment. And that's how he was with us. And he even said, use my name if you need anything, you don't even need my permission. So for us, it's a big irreplaceable loss.
Well, Mr. Appington, one of his classical pieces is that novel, This Is My Brother. Have you read that book?
That was quite a long time ago. You know, the thing is that Kofi Awuno's works were standard texts for virtually every student taking literature for the last 40 years. Yes, I read This Is My Brother.
his first novel many years ago.
But some are saying the accounts in that book seem to coincide with the troubles of the world and how its own author, Professor Awuno, met his untimely death. Have these attacks demonstrated the kind of troublesome world we live in?
Yeah, you see, in fact, I'm not sure that he published another book after The African Predicament, his collection of essays, which is semi-autobiographical, that was published in 2006. And if you read the essays, which is a collection over a long period of time, it shows you his thinking. And it is ironic that a Pan-Africanist like him should meet his death in another African country on Kwame Nkrumah's birthday, brought down in a hail of bullets, which virtually the people who killed him didn't know him. He didn't know them. This is the African predicament. It is a problem made in one African country, Somalia, and brought to Kenya. And all of these problems, I want people to go back in the colonial times, the occupation by Italy, etc., etc. You know, so this is a long time coming, and he wrote about all of this. So it is really, this should open our eyes to the very things he has been saying. You know, people know him as a poet, as a novelist, but he went beyond that. He was the African intellectual par excellence, somebody committed to using his intellect to dissect the African situation. He's one of people like our own Amartya Sen, like Wole Soyinka, like Kinua Achebe, and the others, the independence era writers who were also, and those alive, are still activists. For them, it was not just writing in a vacuum, but their writing is situated in the historical context. And in that sense, they give a cultural and intellectual context and perspective to the political independence that, for example, Ghana won in 1957 and other African countries would win some few years later. It is that important. And as you're saying, his writing mirrors the condition that virtually produced his death.
Well, you agree with me that a lot of the young generation do not know about the troubles in this world that Prof. Awuno used to write about. How do we get them to start reading giants like Prof. Awuno and indeed our writers?
You know, it is only an ill wind that blows no good, as we say. So however bad this news is, one little good thing, if we can call it that, is that probably it will cause people to look a little bit into what he has been saying, into what he and other writers have been saying. Maybe it will get people even to read what he has been writing. Interestingly, I've read one report from Kenya saying that interest in his work, you know, has suddenly risen. People are interested in Kofi Awuno's works, and I know that they are clamoring for his books, and arrangements have been made for publishers to ship books there, etc., etc. So one hopes that at least we will seize this moment, as you have seized it correctly, to ask these important questions. As you know, the Ghana Association of Writers is probably the leading advocacy organization on reading in this country. We've been trying to devise strategies, including our school's outreach program, a book festival, which took place the same day he died, and had he not been in Nairobi, he would surely have been with us. So we want people to read. You are right that young people probably are not aware of many of the situations that are producing these calamities, but they ought to be, because we cannot run away from them. What is past is past. The past has produced the present, and the present will produce the future. And it is important that we understand where we stand in this global world. And that is the kind of thing Professor Awuno and people like him have been alerting us to in the last 40, 50 years.
Are you planning something in his honor?
Definitely, definitely. Oh, you know, early days, yes, I know the body comes tomorrow. And, of course, this is a very big question because on our own, we will definitely plan things for now and also for the future. But, of course, he was not just a writer, big as he is. He was described by one British newspaper as literary royalty in Ghana, and that is exactly the case. But he was also a statesman. He was not just chairman of Council of State, but a diplomat, having represented this country at the United Nations and elsewhere. So the government will be involved, the state will be involved. But we would play our part within that and also separately plan literary activities that will immortalize his name.
We want to thank you for your time with us tonight.
Thank you very much.
Kwesi Janapinteyi is the president of the Ghana Association of Writers. It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana. Can I let's read some of your text messages. Rashid Jensudinwa says, Islam means peace and jihad also means holy war. It is ignorance to be deviant, abuse human rights, and say it is jihad. Monica Collins in Avongo says, these terrorist groups who use the Holy Quran to back their terrorist acts have got it all wrong. Elvis Kwam, Parliament Volta reading says, what are we doing as a country to protect our territories from some of these attacks? And Kojo Akins in Kitko says, Professor Awuno, we in the NDC will forever remember you. And Arab Mohammed from Aja Zungo in Kumasi says, Prof, rest in perfect peace. And Abdullah Fatah also says, oh, Mother Ghana has lost a great literature expert. Seth from Lapot says, I want to know the percentage of this year's BCE results. Thank you. And Anani from Bora Village says, let's obey each other. We are nothing on this earth. Professor Kofi Awuno, rest in God's kingdom. Your name will be remembered always. And Andrew Manga says, as peace-loving Ghanaians, we express our condolences to the victims of last Saturday's attacks in Kenya. And Balara Abdullahi also says, though death is a necessary end, but the sudden demise of Prof. Awuno reminds us of the death of our beloved former President Mills. May their souls rest in peace and condolences to their families. It's Behind the News, live on Radio Ghana. And to some of your text messages. This one with no name says, every meaningful and thankful Muslim should condemn these terrorist attacks. These people are not Muslims, they are only hidden behind Islamic religion. Monica Collins in Avongo says, Professor Kofi Awuno, Demi Fadji, will always be remembered. Rest in perfect peace. And Musa from Pusiga says, when will the forms for police force come out? Government should make it clear because some of us do not get information clear. And Chris in Tavadi says, it's hard to note that Muslims' involvement in political affairs on several occasions for this attitude is therefore leaves much to be desired. Tiga Solomon at Tudong says, Professor Awuno's killing is unfortunate and condemnable. Africa must have a wake up in security. Texan Nicholas in Wan says, it is unfortunate that Ghana has lost a hero like Prof. Awuno in such barbaric attacks. Prof will be forever remembered and celebrated. May the Almighty God bless him. And Peter Bombande in Yendi says, I very much share the same views with Sheikh Harimiao. I cannot imagine any religion which arrogates to itself the right to fight on behalf of God. God, to my mind, cannot accept such misguided criminals as his appointees. Sir, we thank you for your text messages. On the program tonight, the literary world paid glowing tribute to Professor Awuno, who passed on in Kenya through Al-Shabaab attacks. The Islamic scholar denounces those who use the name of the religion to attack innocent citizens. And neighbor Denai Henry Anidoho told us about how insurgents like Al-Shabaab operate in Somalia and other places. And this is where we wrap up for tonight's edition of the program. Simon Lee Odati controlled the sound. And my producers were Christopher Siedu, Edmund Tete, Philip Kofi, John Kobe, and Celestine Avi. My name is Agatha Samuel, and you have a lovely night.